Hi, this is Dana Rosenblum from danaskids.com. I want to thank you for subscribing and becoming a member of our Dana's Kids community and for joining us to listen to this, what I hope is going to be, I'm sure is going to be a great recording. Today we're going to be talking about 5 ways to shift your language and improve your young child's behavior fast. Really simple, action-oriented ways to get in there, just flip things up a little bit so that your child's behavior really reflects some clearer messages. We're super lucky today to have on the call with us somebody that I've worked with for quite some time who's going to be facilitating our call. Her name is Heather Ouida. She is the co-founder of Mommy Bites at mommybites.com, which is a wonderful online community that brings social and educational opportunities for moms. So Heather, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me, Dana. I'm very excited to be here. You know I'm one of your biggest fans, so it's a privilege.
Thank you so much. Are you ready to get started?
Let's get going.
Okay.
So one of the reasons, Dana, I was excited that you actually came up with this topic is I think it's one that comes up a lot, 5 ways to shift your language and improve young child's behavior fast. So I'm curious why you think language is so important when parenting a young child.
Great question, and it really goes to the core of sort of my philosophy when I'm working with parents, is that different children at different stages of their development understand our language in a variety of ways. You know, we don't speak and interact with an infant the same way we would with an older baby or a toddler or a three-year-old. So the message that we give to children, both via our spoken language and our unspoken language, is really, really important. And, you know, after all my years in the classroom and working individually with children and parents, there are really just these minor tweaks that help give children clearer messages, that help them understand what it is that we want from them, what the expectations are, where there's room for some negotiation, and which things are the things that we as the grown-ups in their life, you know, give to them and put into place to help keep them feeling safe and secure. And so I really felt like if I could focus in with parents as part of the parent education that I do and really understanding what their children can understand at different ages and tweaking that language, that they could have just sort of less anxious, happier interactions with their children because their children would be responding in the ways that they had hoped for. Certainly children are not going to be compliant all the time, but at least we can step forward with the most direct language to have the results that we want to see and really help the parent feel empowered, which is my goal.
But Dana, I think first of all, you're spot on. I think that as parents, we sometimes forget that how we speak with and to our children can have powerful and huge influences and impacts on our children. So let's get right into sort of your overall tips. I know you have sort of 5 ways. So let's start with number one.
So the first one I want to start with is that okay that we as parents sometimes add, we tack it on to the end of what we're saying. So I'll often hear a parent at the park say, we're going to leave in 5 minutes, okay? Or I'll be in a home and there'll be a transition, and transitions are challenging enough for young children, but the parent might say something like, we're going to get in the bath soon, okay? And that okay really makes things so unclear for a young child. It really opens up the possibility that there's a response, that there is a choice here, that they can say, no, not okay, right? So I encourage parents to drop the okay, to really give a clearer message to a child. And that message really conveys a consistency that when I say it's time to leave or when I say it's time to come to the table, that's a matter-of-fact statement. That's what we're doing now. So I might say to a child, in 5 minutes, we're going to leave the park. And then I call.
Right, just a statement, not a question, just this is what we're doing.
Exactly. And certainly, you know, I honor children's feelings, and I respect children truly down to my core. But there is, again, that sense of safety in knowing that when my mom says we're going to leave the park, that's what she means. You know, flash forward to separating at school. When my grown-up says he's going to be back at the end of the day, that's a fact, because I know that when I hear this tone and I get this clear message from my grown-up, that's what they mean and that's what they're going to do. So particularly for a young child, dropping that okay from the end, and again, there are certainly times when you're interacting with children where you want to give them room for choices. But during those times where there really aren't options, where this is just what you're going to do, you want to keep it really clear and think about having a matter-of-fact statement and tone in what you're saying to them.
It's such a great point. And I think that so many parents say okay as a reflex, and they don't even realize that they're saying it.
Absolutely. In fact, I have a family who I work with, and I see them on the weekends at times. And, you know, we've worked on this and worked on it, and we were hysterical this past weekend as the father, you know, out came that okay, you know, that we've worked so hard, but sometimes it just sort of slips in there. You know, it really is a conscious decision to let go of that at first, but it really does give a clearer message to your child, and it can be such a huge, such a minor shift, but such a huge impact on what's happening, you know, your child's responsiveness.
Absolutely. So that's the first tip. What's the next one?
So the next big one that I talk with parents about is that idea that you're walking into a birthday party or to the playground, and, you know, in a quiet way, we sort of whisper to the child, remember, no hitting. Right? Or no biting or no pushing. And the child then enters into this play space, and in their mind they hear hitting, pushing, biting. And so this sort of really positive intention statement, you know, to set them up, you know, for what they shouldn't do, actually leaves them thinking about all of those things. So the minor shift there is to send them in with what I call the positive alternative, right? Instead of no hitting, hands on your own body, or play safely. What we want to send the child into playing with what they're supposed to do. So it can be, remember, if you want to turn, you can say, my turn. Or remember, if a friend isn't listening to you and you need help, you can come and get me. So really giving them those positive action steps, sort of sending them off with that. You know, it's as if you were going up to do a speech in front of a group of people and somebody said to you, remember, don't mention whatever, you know, as you get up there in front of a group of people, all you can think about is what you're not supposed to mention. And inevitably, that slips out because it's in your mind. We really want to send them in with those positive things. What can you do? What should you do? So that those are the quick go-to things. It's part of the reason why when I work with young children, I encourage parents to use catchphrases with them. So, can I have a turn with your done? Or I'm not finished with that. The more we use those things and the closer they are to the forefront of a child's mind, the easier it is for them to grasp at that phrase when they need it. And so same thing when you're entering the birthday party or the play date or the playroom or whatever it may be, you know, really thinking about the positive behavior that you want to see rather than what you don't want to see.
Dana, what I love about what you just said too is that it's simple, clear messages, almost encouraging the parent to think about what's their number one goal or what's their number one, quote-unquote, issue right now with their child. I feel like I know I'm at fault for this for before a birthday party. You know, the Charlie Brown, wah-wah. I'll quickly say, okay, no hitting, no running, no pushing. Remember,
right.
Thank you, do this. And, like, I threw off this whole thing, and you're so right. Just that I know that I should make the shift. Stick to the positive, what I do expect, and choose one or two rather than a whole laundry list.
Exactly right. And you really set them up for success, right? You know, in my work, we call these target behaviors, right? So these are the things that we want to see. We want to set them up to be successful. We want to plant those seeds of the great things. And the truth of the matter is that, you know, parents say these things, it's coming from a good place, right? They want right. their kids to be successful. They want to, you know, be conscious. And these are the parents who are conscious of wanting good manners and good behavior and all of these things. It's just a very minor shift in the way a child, you know, what you say and the way that child hears it. So really just little steps to sort of really have a big impact.
I think that's fantastic. You're right. They're small but powerful. How about the third phrase or shift that parents can make?
So the third one that I think is huge for young children, and we are all, myself included, and probably frequently at times, guilty of saying, you have to share, or just share. You know, you're saying this to a toddler. And of course, we all, this share skill is a huge one. You want your child, you need your child to be able to have something and have a friend have that something at some point. The problem with the word share is that it doesn't really mean anything. It's like when we send a child to school for the first time and we talk about school, and in the child's framework, right, in their brain, they don't have any idea what school means. So we're talking about it because it's so common for us. But for them, it doesn't have a clear definition. Same as share, okay? And this is something that, you know, we start with our young toddlers. You know, even with babies and the idea of rolling a ball back and forth, right, as an activity. And even at that very young age when your child's starting to sit up and you can roll a ball back and forth, shifting the language to turn-taking, to having a turn, is so much clearer. So, again, in that ball-rolling situation, you might say, my turn, your turn. Babies love, you know, around that 8-9 months and they're holding something in each hand and banging it together. It's amazing that you can actually play a turn-taking game at that stage where they bang two things together and you say, your turn, and then wait. And then you bang two things and you say, my turn, and really sort of concentrating on that language of turn-taking. It's so much the first steps of teaching children how to problem solve, right? So, you know, we move up to these young toddlers, and one of the ways I like to teach turn-taking with them is to count. You know, and I did it in one of the classes that I teach the other day. We were using cookie cutters with Play-Doh, and there was a dog, and then one of them wanted to have the dog cookie cutter. Two of them wanted to have the dog cookie cutter. Three did. And so what we did was I said, we're going to count to five, and it's going to be your turn till we count to five, and then it's going to be her turn. And when we passed it along to the next friend, well, you know, I talked to them. I said, should we count to five again? And even these kids who were 18, 19 months old could grasp on, you know, could hold on to the idea, right? We count to five, and then it's somebody else's turn. And within minutes, as we got to five, they were handing that cookie cutter to the next child. It's really such an easy way, a concrete way of saying, you're going to take a turn, you're going to have somebody else have a turn, and then if you want, you can have a turn again. So again, that idea of minor language shift being far clearer in what the expectation is. Expectation is you're going to have a little bit of time with this item, and then somebody else will. And then if you want it back, you can have it. So really, again, that minor shift.
Why I love that, Dana, is just hearing you. This is the first time I've actually ever heard that shift. And we've been doing this a while, so that just jumped out at me. Because what it does is it shows the child that by using turn-taking is that I will get this back. I'm giving you my toy for a little bit, but you can be sure I'm going to get it back. Versus share, I think sometimes children don't want to share because they're like, hello, this is my favorite
dog.
I'm not giving it to you.
Yes. Right. What does that mean? Absolutely. And it's also really concrete, and it's funny because, you know, when you first start doing this with young children, the focus so much becomes counting to five or counting to ten, depending upon sort of how long, you know, based on the children's age, they can delay getting that back. And, you know, we've almost totally forgotten about the fact that we want to use that cookie cutter with the Play-Doh. It's just about this process of I count to five and he gets it, and I count to five and I get it back. It's such a powerful, wanting to have control, and that, you know, counting to five or counting to ten really brings that control back into the situation and feels more manageable for a young child. And so it's just clearer and more concrete and easier for them to handle. You know, having to share things is challenging for us even as adults. You know, if your best friend came into your house and wanted to, you know, take all of your crystal, you might think twice about it. You know, these are the things that are important to you. In fact, when you're talking about young siblings or play dates, I'll often encourage a parent to have a special box where a child can put 3 to 5 of her favorite things and not have to share those, right? Mm-hmm. It's okay if you don't want your baby sister to touch those things that are the most precious to you. You know, that's about honoring the fact that, you know, children aren't stupid because they're little. They're just smaller people, and they feel really strongly about the things that are theirs. So if we, in combination, really honor that certain things are precious to them with also that process of really understanding turn-taking and understanding that it's manageable, it feels better for them. In fact, I was watching Mr. Rogers the other day, and there's a new video coming out about him, and he was saying, you know, anything that is speakable is manageable. Anything that's mentionable is manageable, and that's it. You know, you really, if you can talk through it and you can understand it, it just feels easier to handle. And turn-taking for a young child is huge. It's a huge milestone.
Huge. Yeah, turn-taking for adults is a milestone. So we've done your three shifts. What's your fourth shift or change of phrase?
Okay, so my next big one, and this can at times be controversial, but it's the idea of sort of, I don't want to say demanding, but demanding that your child say sorry, right? So we get into these situations where, you know, your head goes down and you're incredibly embarrassed because all of a sudden your child has become the aggressor, right? They've grabbed something or they've hit someone, and our gut reaction is, say I'm sorry, right? And we get angry with them and we're embarrassed and we want them to say sorry. But what happens is very quickly, and I will say this, there is always a time and place for sorry. And I think that if you do use it, from time to time, it can be effective. But because young children are learning how to control their bodies and how to interact socially in a way that's appropriate, you know, we can have a lot of times to have to say I'm sorry. So what happens is that the phrase becomes meaningless. And children don't know why they're saying it. And it doesn't really mean anything to them or to the other child. And so, you know, I've been in groups where literally a child will be grabbing at another child's arm all the while saying, I'm sorry. Because that's become, you know, this is what you do. It's like I do something bad and I'm sorry is my get out of jail free card. But we lose really the teachable moment in the I'm sorry, which is that we want to teach our children to be empathic, right? We want to teach them to think about what others are going through. We want to teach them so that when the next time rolls around that they're thinking about grabbing, they think about what happened the time before and how that child looked and if they were sad. And so I encourage parents to have their children do what I call a check-in, right? So you grab something, you need to go check in and see if she's okay. And that might be saying, are you okay? That may be saying, do you need a tissue? That may be saying, I'm sorry, you know, depending upon the situation. But it's the idea of getting in there with the other child, saying something, checking in, and waiting for a response. right? Really valuing that something happened here that wasn't quite all right. I can't just say something quick and then walk away. I need to find out if that other person is okay, and if they're not, what I can do to help make them feel better. It takes more time, but it really develops more character in your child, more empathy. It's such a strong teachable moment for what's a pro-social skill, for a skill that we all want our children to have as they move through life, right? The ability to think about another person's point of view. Now, when you're talking about a very young child, they're very egocentric. We know this. And so, yes, even that becomes a little bit rote. But it's the rote of waiting for the answer, taking some action to make someone feel better. As you are talking about a 2.5-year-old or a 3-year-old, they can start looking at the other child's face and identifying. You know, look at her face. Do you think she's feeling sad right now or happy right now? Oh, she feels sad. You know, the 3.5-year-old, you can say, she feels sad. Do you remember a time when you felt sad? What helped you feel better? And so now you're really making what can be like a quick, you know, I'm hitting you and saying sorry at the same time into a valuable teachable moment that is working on your child's character, that really is, you know, important and teaching skills that you want them to have for a lifetime.
I think that is so important. And I think that you're right. What happens is, and I only know this because I have older children, is the phrase, I'm sorry, they get completely habituated to.
Mm-hmm.
And you're
mm-hmm.
right, they don't take time to think about how this affected the other person.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I appreciate, especially when, you know, brothers fight, that one of the brothers actually is not really sorry at all.
Right.
But that doesn't mean he can't empathize with that the other person's feelings got hurt or got hurt in general.
Absolutely.
That's two separate things.
Absolutely. And checking in and waiting for the answer, acknowledging that, you know, yes, I meant that I said I was angry with you, but, you know, you're my brother and I love you and I want you to be okay, and what can I do? Do you need a tissue or an ice pack or whatever it may be? And again,
exactly.
You know, I want to underline that all of these phrases, you know, parents who are taking the time to say to a child, you need to say sorry, right? These are parents who are really thoughtful. You know, we all have been in situations where one child hits another and that child's parent doesn't say anything to them and you're like, can I parent somebody else's child? What do I do here? You know, these parents are thoughtful. You know, the idea is that it's coming from a good place, but we want it to be clearer. We want it to have more of an impact. We want to really be growing these skills from a young age that are having an impact on the child as they're growing.
So important. Phrase 5 that parents can sort of shift when talking to their children.
Okay, so this is a big one for me, and it's one that I've spoken about many, many times because it's really important to me. So years ago when the idea of timeout came out, right, and we hear parents all the time saying, you're in timeout. The idea was what we as adults would do, right? So you have a long day and somebody comes in and requests one more thing and you think to yourself, I can't give anybody one more thing. I need a timeout. I have to just like take a few minutes and calm myself down before I can address this next thing. So it came from a really good place. It came from this place of wanting children to leave a situation so that they could come back and manage it better. The problem is what it has devolved into, right? Where you put your child in a chair, and I understand that sort of the common method is 1 minute for every year that they are alive, and they sit there, right? And then they go back into playing. Well, for me, that loses the teachable moment. You really have not learned anything other than when I do this, I sit in this chair. And in the best of situations, a child goes back to what they were doing and doesn't do it again because they have understood implicitly that sitting in this chair is a punishment for what I was doing that was wrong. Problem is, when it comes to young children, it's not that clear. You know, sitting in a chair doesn't necessarily mean anything. And in the most negative situations, it can be really scary when a parent puts a child, a young child, in a chair and then leaves the room, or has them sit on in the naughty chair on the naughty step and then leaves the room. There can be some really scary, anxiety-producing emotions there. Now, what I say sort of in this conversation is that if you are already using timeout and it's effective and you are using it in a more sort of teachable moments way, and I'm going to talk about my alternative, then I say certainly stick with it. But if you have up until this point used it and it either hasn't been effective or you haven't started using it or there hasn't really been a learning opportunity in the timeout, then I would encourage you to shift to what I call take a break. The idea being that when it comes to a young child, if they've hit, you give the child a reminder, no hitting, hands on your own body. And maybe you give a second reminder, at which point you say, you know what, it looks like you're having a hard time controlling your body, you need to take a break. And with that, the child maybe goes into another room where it's a little bit quieter, or, you know, for some young children, it can even be sitting in the parent's lap. You know, it's not about the parent sort of hugging, kissing, and smooching them while they're taking a break, but it is being removed from that activity so that with the language, no hitting, and the idea of calming a body, so that they get back to a place where they have more control over their behavior. And then the big piece, which I find is most left out with timeout, is what happens when we go back to playing, okay? Mm-hmm. The teachable moment is in what's the positive behavior and giving a child an opportunity to try again, okay? So if your child's hit and now they're going back to play, you can say, oh, it looks like your body is calm. You took a break. It's time to go play safely. Are you ready? Okay, go play safely. You know, I know you can do it. Go try again. And so now you really have this teachable moment that says, here's what was not okay. Here is what you need to do. And here's an opportunity to go back and practice doing it because I know you can. And so overall, it just gives, first of all, it's clearer and easier to understand for a young child. But it also gives them an opportunity to learn what the expected behavior is rather than this sort of arbitrary sit in a chair for 4 minutes and then go back and play.
Right. And at what point, Dana, do the parents set the time or the parents truly check in and say, it looks like you're calm, are you ready? So you put the control back up with the child.
So, yeah, that's a great question. A little bit of both, right? So, you know, with a very young child, talking about a toddler, you know, I think it's much more difficult when a toddler has gotten out of control, whether they're tantruming or hitting, for them to get in control. So that's particularly when I want a parent to stay very close. I never encourage a parent to leave the room, but when you're talking about a toddler, I want parents to stay really close and really help that toddler come back down. And a toddler isn't necessarily going to be able to say, okay, I'm calm now, I can go back to play. So this is where a parent is really going to label, look, your body is calm, you're ready to go play. As we start talking about a 2.5 to 3-year-old, I start checking in with them, and I'll say to them, is your body calm? Are you ready to go play? And you know what? Sometimes they'll say no, particularly right. For children who start this really early. As they get older, I've had kids put themselves in a take a break, right? Yeah. You know what? I'm just having a hard time. I need to take a break. And they just feel like they've gotten so worked up, which is another reason why I really like this technique. You know, no child who I've ever met is going to say, I think I need a timeout. But a child might say, you know what? I need a break. And that is a really pro-social thing to say when you need a break, right? And to say, I need a couple of minutes to, like, get myself back together here. It really is teaching a child a coping strategy, a skill that they can use straight on up, is to recognize when I've gotten to this point where, like, things aren't going exactly the way that I want them to, and probably I'm part of the reason, to evaluate that comes more from a method like take a break than from somebody else saying to you, you're in timeout. So I think that's really something that grows with a child. And that's my goal so often with, you know, a lot of these techniques is that, you know, when we're thinking about discipline, when we're thinking about our role as grown-ups, you know, to teach children sort of the best ways to interact in the world, we want to teach them things that are going to grow with them. We want to teach them things that, you know, while they know very clearly that I am your grown-up and I'm always going to be here to support you, I'm always going to be here is what my father always called the safe haven that is your family. You know, you can always come back here. I also want to give you the skills to evaluate these situations on your own. I want you to know what to do so that when you're 15 and your friend hands you a beer, you know, you can think about whether or not this is a good choice for me right now to drink this. It really starts from such a young age, thinking about these clear messages and how to have children evaluate those situations because they understand what the expectations are.
It's so true. It puts the onus a little bit on the children, which I think is a good thing. It empowers them just enough. They still have their parents and their guidelines, but just enough.
Absolutely.
Sorry.
That's okay.
I was just going to say, I want to recap my takeaways from what you've gone over. So
absolutely.
My takeaways are the five sort of language shifts that parents can make is drop the okay.
Absolutely.
Make it a statement. It's not up for discussion. You're not really asking if it's okay if you leave the park. You're telling them it's time to leave the park. So drop the okay.
Right.
Number two,
right.
What I heard you say is drop the no, the negative. No running, no hitting, and pick one or two behaviors and flip it to the positive.
Absolutely.
So one of the ones you said instead of, you know, no hitting, remember to keep your hands to yourself. So
right.
State it in the positive.
Absolutely.
Instead of saying you have to share, to switch it and say, let's take turns. So the child knows that it will come back. It's a give and take. This item will come back to me. I'm not giving it away forever. I'm not using this sort of weird word share, which I have no idea what it means. I'm taking turns. It will come back to me.
And it's message of teaching what that looks like, you know. So it's not even just leaving it as turn-taking, but, you know, that counting, that active teaching of what this looks like that really sticks with them.
Yes. Yes, you're so right. That's major with that. And then the fourth one that I heard you say is instead of saying to the child, say you're sorry, use it as a teachable moment to help the child empathize, and the child can go over, how are you feeling? Can I get you a tissue? How can I make it better?
Right.
And not this knee-jerk, you're sorry, and the child just says sorry, and then they know that it's over.
Exactly.
And
right.
The fifth one, instead of saying time out, encourage the child to take a break. And it doesn't have to be this punitive, sit on this naughty chair. It can be take a break, get control of your body, and also putting the onus a little bit on them. Looks like you're ready. Are you ready to go back? So those are my five takeaways, Dina. And I think
you got them.
You're so right. Yay! And I think
that
you're so right that they're small yet powerful changes that parents can start making today that will have a huge impact on children's behavior, not just right now in the child's lives, but as they grow.
Absolutely, and those are just so important to me, and really I hope, you know, show everyone how quickly you can have an impact, right? It doesn't have to be major life changes all the time. There are really some little things that can improve your day's day. And I really feel strongly that there are always little things that we can do to improve it. I want parents and caregivers to enjoy the time they spend with children. I want children to, you know, to be the most successful that they can be. And that's really what Dana's Kids is about. That's what the Dana's Kids community is about, is parents supporting each other, is thinking about ways to give clear messages, to support children in their learning, to support families, and really, you know, understand that when you feel empowered, when you understand your children, when children, you know what the expectations are, everybody's happier. Everybody is more successful. Everything is more enjoyable. Not that there's not going to be bumps, but that, you know, there are things that we can do to really maximize the good times. And what family doesn't want that? So truly very important. Yeah. And Heather, I cannot thank you enough for being here and for helping to facilitate the call. I look forward to continuing my relationship with you and with Mommy Bites. Everyone who is listening, I thank you. I encourage you to be an active member in the Dana's Kids community. Reach out if you need some individualized support. Truly, I am here to help you. This is why I do this job. You know, you're important to me, and I want to help you be the best parent you can be, have your child, you know, really reach their fullest potential. I'm available to you, and reach out if you need me. So thank you so much. Bye-bye.